This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events.
I wouldn't call my generation is a lost generation. I think our generation at this moment is very much self-assured because we went through all these trusting and mistrust and be devil and angel at the same time. And both extremes we all gone through. I mean, for me, I almost brought my father to denounce him as a reactionary.
Coming of age during China's Cultural Revolution. A conversation with author An Qimin on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. An Qimin is the first person who'd tell you that her childhood in China was ordinary. That is, ordinary by post-revolutionary Chinese standards. She was born in 1957, just a few years before the start of China's infamous Cultural Revolution. That very troubled decade in which every level of Chinese society was fraught with struggle and dissension, when the questions of the day revolved around who was a true revolutionary and who were the class enemies. Even though An Qimin's parents were not working class, the true revolutionaries, she was a survivor and learned to work within the system. She writes about her childhood in China in her recently published memoir titled Red Azalea. Though she was still young, Min says she clearly remembers the day the Cultural Revolution began.
When it started, I was 8 years old, and I remember that night my parents were burning books in their bathroom, and I saw the smoke coming out, and it's just dark and scary, and then was the next door neighbor. I heard her calling, screaming. Then I look out the window, saw that a bunch of young people, I didn't know they were called Red Guards. They were the Red Guards and from Fudan Middle School, and they were just trying to loot the lady's home. And so the lady called help and help and screams, and nobody helped. So that was the night that I realized that was the revolution came. Yeah.
Were your parents supporters of the Communist Revolution and Chairman Mao, as far as
they
you
were
know?
Not aware of it, like every other people in the neighborhood, and they have been the believers of the parties all their lives, so they were taught one way to think. So whatever party says, they just follow. And but they never really speak about it.
What were they frightened about that night that the Cultural Revolution officially started?
They were afraid of the letters from a family. They are checking everything to see if there's any words that complains about socialism. And also they burned some children's books, like with a Little Mermaid. This kind of, I was just beginning to read these books, but I can't find them after that day.
Even before that, your parents weren't really allowed to work in the professions in which they were trained, were they?
That's correct.
What did they do? What were they trained to do, and what kind of jobs did they actually have?
My father worked in a technology institute, and he is a industrial drawing instructor, but his true love is for astronomy. So he did the astronomy thing and at his spare time. And my mother was a teacher, and one day she was She was assigned to teach Chinese, and the next day was teaching Russian. So whatever party calls, she does.
So they were able to get along in the
Right,
system.
right.
Well, you were actually yourself very good at working within the system. You became one of the leaders in the school's Little Red Guard. What was that organization like?
It was just like, here you wanted to be the best and the brightest. And I had the same at that time. And because my parents was not that red, like people from three generations of working class family, and they're considered the purest. And I thought, my family wasn't that pure, so I wanted to be pure. So I just did everything I could to be a revolutionary. For example, I will organize a day, it's called a meaningful day, and we will collect pennies and to donate to American starving children. We will show the pictures of s children look like skeletons, black children, and we were told that they're American kids. And as children, you have a very, trusting heart. You just think, oh, we have rice in the rice bowl, and they don't have it. So let's do something about it.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, over here we were told the same
Right,
thing.
right.
Parents here would tell their children, you've got to eat that because there are starving children in China.
Right, yeah, that was how when I just first came here, the airplane was descending on Chicago. I saw so many lights. I thought it's like a dream. I just couldn't believe this is what the America that I knew. I just
This wasn't the
thought,
country that you'd been told
no,
about.
right.
Well, I thought early on some of your stories about how you were able to get along were very interesting. And your mother got into trouble inadvertently, and you were able to draft a speech to get her out of it. Could you
Right.
tell us about that incident?
Yes. My mother was assigned to do a print. It's called "Long Live Chairman Mao," a long, long life to Chairman Mao. And then she was sick, and her head. She can't see. She could not think clearly, so she misprinted one word. In Chinese, it's "Long, long life to Chairman Mao." It's called. 敬祝毛主席万寿无疆, and she misprinted one word, so it became 敬祝毛主席无寿无疆, which means a no-no life to Chairman Mao. Then she was criticized. She was called a reactionary, and then I found that my mother come home was totally frustrated, and she did not know what to do because once she's called a reactionary, all we would be related, and we would have bad names. So I thought of an idea. I constructed a paper and give it to my mother for her to read in a meeting, self-examination meeting. I said to make a mistake is not a reactionary deed, but to not allow a person to correct her mistake. That's a crime. That's a reactionary thing to do.
And this was a
So
quote from Chairman Mao,
that's
wasn't it?
right. And my mother got out of it.
So it was good that you were able to memorize
The
and learn these
quotations,
lessons
right.
very well in order to use them to your own advantage. Despite your parents' education, they had a difficult time financially raising you with the children at that time. Was that typical of most people in that position?
Right, it's typical. I didn't feel too bad about it because all the kids, we had a frostbite on the hands and the feet in the winter, and it's just everybody's the same way, so nothing too unusual about it.
They weren't able to buy enough clothes or.
That's right. The only thing was because we were not from working class family. At the time, if we were the working class family, we would have a medical insurance. But the intellectuals, when your kids get sick, you have to pay everything.
And it was required that they both work at that time, right?
Right. They were heavily in debt and working.
And so you, as the oldest, were left in charge?
Right. I was 5 years old and just organizing the little kids.
I guess reading about your childhood, it sounds like a nightmare, but your experiences weren't all that different, as you say, from those of millions of other Chinese children who were growing up during that same period. And as young children, you were obviously very good targets for the messages of the government during the Cultural Revolution. What were you told was the mission of the revolution? And what was your role as children in that?
Well, the mission to us was about democracy and the freedom and the fairness and the equality between people and down with American imperialism. And we want to liberate the world. And for children, I just wanted to be a communist and wanted to save the world.
And as an individual, you weren't supposed to think of yourself as an individual. Is that another
No, it
one of the...
never came to my mind because always the idea was brought to me that the group is much more important than the individual, and the individualism is bad. And I just remember, when I was about 12 years old, I just wanted to die so I can be honored by Mao. I wanted to die in accident, saving little children and in the road in the car accident, so I could have my legs, cut off, so I could be brought to see Chairman Mao, just like the little heroine Dai Birong did. So it was an honor. But of course, I waited on that corner by Xiangyang Road and the Huaihai Zhonglu, Xiangyang Zhonglu, and the accident never really took place. I was disappointed. But now thinking back, when I'm in America, thinking a child would have that kind of thoughts, they just wanted to die for Mao, it's shocking.
You'd take them for counseling.
Yeah, right.
Do you think probably as a child it must have been easier to get through that period than for many of the adults who had known another life in China?
Right.
That would have been a shock. When you were around 12, I think it was, you were also forced to publicly denounce one of your favorite teachers who was accused of being a spy. Was that a turning point for you? I know it was difficult, but did you begin to have any
Right.
misgivings at that time?
It was an emotional turning point because at that time, to be able to denounce the people that you love the most is the way to prove that you are a true revolutionary. Because it's so hard, it was very popular. I mean, people, children denounce their parents. And I don't know how they are facing their parents now, but I think the parents are always forgiving. They think you did what you have to at that time. By denouncing the parents, you could look revolutionary, so you'd be acceptable by the society. And what happened to me was the same thing because the teacher was considered as American spy, and I was brought to denounce her. I remember the crowd was shouting, "Down with American imperialists, the dog of the imperialists." And if I don't denounce her, and I will be criticized, and all my titles will be taken away. So it was very frightening. And in the meantime, I loved this person. And I remember that night after I said, to the teacher, in the microphone, I say, "If you dare to talk to me more, I'm going to use the needles to stitch your lips together." And that was a very cruel thing. But I was shaking. I was psychologically was just in that shocking stage. And I said all this, and I was mentally was gone. Then I went home, and everybody was praising me, the school, and I remember my mother had this conversation with me. My mother said, "I'm a teacher too. You just imagine if one of my students do that to me, how would I would feel?" So she told me that she was going to disown me.
She was the one person who was really unhappy with you for doing that.
Right. She was unhappy with the whole system, and she's never, my mother's failure, step by step, I would just witness everything that she said she did. She was just a failure. So I wanted to be the opposite. I don't want that thing to happen to me.
She was a failure because she didn't go along
That's
with the
right.
system.
Right.
So prior to that, I mean, you were aware of public denunciations, and had you always thought that if people were brought to this public stage to be denounced, then they must be guilty of the charges? And this was your first personal involvement?
Right.
And
We believed the party 100%. There was no doubt about it.
You're listening to Common Ground, a service of the Stanley Foundation. My guest is An Chi Min. Her memoir of growing up during China's Cultural Revolution is titled Red Azalea and was recently published by Pantheon. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available. Listen at the end of this broadcast for details. The Stanley Foundation, which sponsors Common Ground, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. The real turning point in An Chi Min's life came at the age of 17. She was sent to a work camp in the countryside. Chairman Mao shipped 20 million young people, all told, to such camps to be, as Mao said, re-educated by the peasants. An Chi Min was assigned to a camp near the East China Sea called Red Fire Farm.
I was thrown to the field and to work 14 hours a day and grow crops. And then after a few months, you just find that you're fighting with the weeds. And one day you cut it, and the next day it comes back. And because the land was so salty, and it grows nothing. And I was so tired.
This was land that was right next to the sea.
Right, China
so it wasn't,
sea.
It
right.
wasn't farmland.
That's right. And I just remember that I was literally on my knees, and the land was so hard, and my knees just bleed. And it wasn't just happened to me, it happened to other girls in the camp. And in the summer, we were working in the rice paddy, and we went, like women have, when we were having our periods, and we're not allowed to rest. So you see these blood and drifting in the water. It's just, and then many women just got sick over that. And it was, you know, you just, when you are physically down there, you know what's not right right away.
And you had a good friend who was terribly traumatized. I mean, one of your few friends in the camp. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what happened there? Because I think that was...
Yeah, so, because I was 17 and 18 and, you know, was curious about my body and just thought that I thought that I was the only person who was restless. And I witnessed my friend, comrade, Little Green, and her boyfriend, her lover. They did this in the rice field, and the man was called, and she was told to accuse the man as a rapist, and so the man was shot, and then she regretted, Little Green regretted what she had done to her lover, and she's gone mad. And
sexual, you know, desire.
Nobody talks about it, but it was on everybody's mind. We're all young.
An Chi Min's friend, Little Green, was destroyed by the execution of her lover and was sent to a Shanghai mental hospital. Min knew that sex and even close friendships could be very dangerous, but she couldn't stand the isolation and eventually found a close friend in, of all people, her company's commander, a woman named Yan.
When I was getting disillusioned, I was trying to look for heroic figures to just rely on them to for strength. And that's how I found my commander, Yan. And she's a very tough red. She's a revolutionary. But then as time goes by, I found that she has her own inner conflicts.
The way you got out of the camp was really surprising. I mean, you were chosen among a lot of people to play a lead role in one of Madame Mao's famous political operas. How were you chosen for that role? How did they find you in this camp?
It's amazing to me too. I was working in the cotton fields, and I found this group of people coming out of a van. And at the farm, there's no such. We have never seen a van, or if there's a tractor pass by, we would be very curious. It was so boring place, working all day, and this van, and we saw people wear this green army jacket, and it looks like they're from higher government group, and they came down and just look at us, one after another, and when they came down to me, they asked for directions, on how to get to the headquarters. And as I was answering them, I found they was looking for me from sides, and they were checking if I have if my the hands is look like a working person's hands, and they asked me how these questions very odd, and they asked how heavy I was, and then they finally I found that they didn't take the way I directed them to the headquarters, but I got the notice later on saying they are from the Shanghai Film Studio. So I went and I went on for competition. It was like national competition, and they asked no acting skill. They wanted the actual peasants or soldiers or workers to play the real thing, but they do teach acting. And one day they asked me to do this improvisation. They asked me to drink water, so I took the mug and a drink, and they said, no, you did this wrong, because you have your little finger tilted up, and that looks like Miss Bourgeoisie who has tons of time, and the correct way to do it should be grabbed a mug and drink it down in one breath and wipe your mouth with your sleeves. So that's how I was chosen. And the lines are kind of ridiculous. It's half opera and half dialogue.
But An Chi Minh's film career was short-lived. In 1976, Chairman Mao died, and his wife was quickly arrested and then denounced by political rivals. Madam Mao's work was called subversive, and since An Chi Minh was involved in that work, she was blacklisted and rejected for any future work. Minh scrubbed floors for 6 years after that episode, even when she was sick with tuberculosis.
After Gang of Four was kicked out the stage, and Madam Mao was arrested, Mao died, and I was punished in a very Chinese way. They never told me what was wrong with me, and they just had it's called the black record in my dossier. So wherever I go, they would have the branch party secretary know that I should be treated in a certain way. So although I worked very hard, but I was never on the credits. So I always, for years, I was under the title of a borrowed worker from Red Fire Farm. And I got very physically sick, and I had tuberculosis. And then one day, the friend I met in the studio called Joan Chen, she's now an American actress. She plays in The Last Emperor as Empress. And in Twin Peaks, and now in Heaven and Earth, she plays the mother. And in Golden Gate, the recent movie, and at the time she was in America for 3 years, and she wrote me a letter one day. She said, "How are you doing?" And I wrote her back. I said, "Not doing well." She said, "Have you ever thought of America?" And I said, "How would I do it? I don't speak a word of English." She said, "I will try to find a school that doesn't require English skill, an art school." She said, "You know how to paint, right? Brush paintings." I said, "Yes." So she arranged it and found the school of the Ernest Art Institute of Chicago. So they accepted me. But by the time I got here, I got kicked out by the school because they found that I didn't speak the language.
But you've only been here 10 years, and you knew no English when you came. And listen to you now. I find that very amazing. I mean, it's clear that your determination got you through a lot of difficult times in your life. And I imagine coming here without any English wouldn't have been much of a picnic.
Thank you. Well, I think if anybody who's like me had a no way to return, and I think you just manage it.
You get through.
Right, you get through.
And now you went back to China for the first time last year.
It wasn't the first, but first time officially. So I went home, and they thought that they had so much story to tell about me because the press was, they knew about what happened during the Madam Mao time and what happened in the film studio. So
And they
it
saw that as
was.
unfair? I mean, that
Right. So they say,
through no fault of
right.
your
So
own,
they
they were
wanted to,
suddenly
yeah,
put
they
on
want.
like a blacklist.
Right. They wanted to make me look good to the Chinese public. So they say, well, Can we say that you work at the film studio as associate director? I said, hey, I wasn't director at all. I was a janitor, a set clerk, and I was nobody. So they said, no, it was the past. We want to make you look good. And I said, no, that's not the point. We have to remember what happened and give the history its true face, or, there's no meaning for anything.
And you made quite a few media appearances. You were able to tell the truth about
No,
what happened?
not really. Well, they like it because the book was well received in America and Europe, and so they
This book,
start
Red Azalea?
right. Because the part of it was published in Granta, the magazine, and part of it I entered on the American writing competitions. So they thought that I brought China respect and honor. So I was very proud of myself too at the television appearance. But in the meantime, I found that it was ironic because nobody has read my book yet.
Right, is
So
it available in China?
no, it's rejected now officially. And after I formally deliver my manuscript to the Shanghai Publishing House, and they faxed me a formal answer, says the material is too controversial, and we wanted to focus in the future, so they don't like it to be mentioned.
I've read some about the generation that grew up during the Cultural Revolution, and it's been referred to as a lost generation. And I don't think there's a whole lot of awareness or much awareness in this country about the confusing state of mind that existed during that period. There's this political intrigue that's always going on, and you don't know who to trust or what is going to be the correct line to follow the next day. What kind of psychological toll does that have on people?
I think it's a very good question, because I wouldn't call my generation is a lost generation. I think our generation at this moment is very much self-assured, because we went through all these trusting and mistrust and be devil and angel at the same time, and both extremes we all gone through. I mean, for me, I almost brought my father to denounce him as a reactionary, and then, my mother and all these families, he went gone through so much. So I know what exactly I don't want it. So at this point, so you if you you know that, you pretty much know what you wanted. And because we trust nobody, so we trust our own feelings. So you see, China is shaping up so fast, embracing capitalism so fast, because people just had enough of Red Fire Farm.
Writer An Chi-min has been my guest on Common Ground. She's the author of Red Azalea, published this winter by Pantheon. It's a memoir of her life growing up in China. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. To order a printed transcript or audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per audio cassette to Common Ground, show number 9412, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. To order by credit card, call 1-800-825-5746. Again, the program number is 9412, and the phone number for credit card orders is 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.